It's like I got brand new eyes and I can finally see what has always been right there in front of me. And with these brand new eyes, I'll take in everything and I will finally see me.
Well, good morning, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Health Matters. I'm Kermit Poling, typically on during the mornings, not necessarily during the evenings, but filling in this evening for Health Matters, and I'm glad to have you joining us. According to the CDC, an estimated 7 million Americans have vision impairment, including 1 million who are blind, and vision loss is among the top 10 causes of disability in the United States. Well, this being Healthy Vision Month, I'm joined in the studio this evening by Dr. James Lusk and Dr. Brian Lusk to talk about eye health and the importance of protecting our vision. And so first of all, Dr. Lusk's plural, welcome to Health Matters.
Thank you for having us.
Well, it's great to have you here. I do want to invite our listeners to call in with questions and comments about eye health. Here's the number, 800-552-8502. That number again, 800-552-8502. And if you're so inclined, we would love to have you join us on the program tonight. Well, Lusk Eye Specialists is celebrating, you're celebrating your 40th anniversary, which is absolutely an amazing history of success. But before we get into talking about specifics about eye health, I thought it would be kind of interesting to know how Lusk Eye has grown and changed through the years, and how eye care and, well, even just running a medical business has changed over 40 years.
Well, if I go back 40 years, the development has been astounding. You know, cataract surgery in the early years was much more difficult, much more complicated. In fact, when I started, patients were wearing very thick post-cataract glasses that led to falls and hip fractures. And then the lens implant technology, within 2 years of entering practice, we got the lens implants, and the biggest thing has been the innovation in the companies, by the companies in healthcare, and it's not just ophthalmologists, across the board. I think our healthcare system, our Medicare system, has really supported innovation and has made the United States a leader in healthcare entrepreneurship and development. I love your title, Health Matters, because when I was 40, I didn't know what that meant. But now that I'm in my 70s, I understand. You know, I have accessed myself for several procedures that have allowed me to keep working these 40 years.
I'm 40, and I don't know what that means.
Well, you might find out. Ask him.
I'm trying to give him a little advice, but they never listen.
Well, and I know, James, I think you're you did. You came on a show after you had cataract surgery on the receiving side, right?
If I remember correctly. That was one of those procedures that helped me out. That's true. And I had LASIK surgery when it first came out, and that got me out of an optical correction. And then I developed a cataract in one eye, and I still have a minimal cataract in the other eye. Still 20/20 in both eyes. So I'm happy to be able to continue to perform surgery and see patients in the clinic all day long, and I enjoy that. I mean, it's, you know, working with the Suns is a special treat. So
he's still setting the standard 40 years later,
which is quite an accomplishment.
100,000 cases and 40 years later.
That's what I was going to ask. So yeah. How many?
Well, not that many cataracts. We are on our 100,000th new patient office visit, but I have done 40,000 cataract or refractive procedures. Those are the LASIKs and actually RK in the day of RK.
Correcting your vision so you can see better without glasses, basically.
Right.
So changing the focus.
Sure. And let's also just clarify here, because you're an ophthalmologist, you do the surgeries and all of this. That is definitely in a different classification from optometrists. Not that optometrists don't have their place, but talk a little bit about the vast additional training that you go into to become ophthalmologist.
Well, we really see ophthalmology and optometry as partners in serving our communities. They're really kind of an extension of eye care, and there's a lot of people that wouldn't have access to care and might slip through the cracks. you know, without the plethora of doctors that we have. And in fact, as you know, as you pointed out, we go through some extra training to learn how to do certain surgical procedures to correct people's vision. We actually need assistance of optometric physicians or clinicians to help us on the clinic side, so that we can use our skills, you know, on the surgical side. So there, it's a really kind of a vital partnership we see it as opposed to, you know, in the, and maybe in the past historically, it's been two separate fields that are very different. And nowadays, they actually, you know, it's more vertically integrated. And in fact, we have a number of optometrists that work within our practice that assist us with all aspects of our care. Now, the surgeries are just performed by the three LUSCs, the MDs who've gone through special surgical training. But our optometrists kind of have specialty niches in specialty contact lens fitting to treat certain disorders that maybe people aren't great surgical candidates. They specialize in dry eye therapy. We actually have an optometrist who works with us, Dr. Pam Terrio, who has written a book on dry eye disease and is actually an international expert on dry eyes. And so she kind of fills that niche. And then we also have other optometrists in our practice that do just kind of routine eye care, glasses and contacts and yearly exams and those kinds of things. And so we partner not only with the optometrists in our practice, but also those that are out in the community. And we kind of work together to serve the citizens of Shreveport and the Arklatex.
You're listening to Health Matters this evening, and my guests, Dr. Brian Lusk, you were just hearing his voice, Dr. James Lusk. We're going to be talking about healthcare, and if you have a question or a comment that you would like to make, give us a call, and we'll put you on the air, if you'll let us, at 800-552-8502. Again, the number is 800-552-8502. Now, one thing that you alluded to, James, when you were talking about the procedures that you've had is you said you still have 20/20 vision. We hear that a lot. What exactly does that mean?
Well, we have a designated letter chart, and I can see at 20 feet where the normal person sees at 20 feet. Now, if you're 20/25, you would only see at 20 feet what a normal person sees at 25 feet. Or if you're 20/40, they'd be able to see that 40 feet away, and you can only see it 20 feet away. So it takes more magnification, a closer image for you to see the same optotype print as someone else saw at 20 feet. A normal person sees at 20 feet, and you're 20/40. That means they can see it at 40 feet. You can only see it at 20. You can't get out
so
to
they
40
have phenomenal
feet.
Vision.
That's and that's kind of a layperson's explanation of it as well. There's actually a more optical or physics understanding of it, where actually a 20/20 letter, each letter on the eye chart actually subtends a visual angle. If you were to draw a line from your retina in the back of your eye to that letter, from the bottom of the letter and the top of the letter, and draw an arc, there is there's an angle there from the top to the bottom of the letter, and the smaller that visual angle is, the better your vision is. And so 5 minutes of arc is considered to be, you know, 20/20 or perfect vision, and so the 20/20 letters subtend that angle at 20 feet. And so there's other ways to understand that as well, but what he described is probably the easiest way to kind of for folks to appreciate what that means.
Well, I know there's some aspect of vision acuity, the nearsightedness, the farsightedness, that also relates to the shape of the eye, right? That differs from person to person.
Absolutely. Ophthalmology is kind of a neat field in that it kind of melds, a lot of the sciences of biology with physics as well. And chemistry, and we deal with a lot of optics and optical physics kind of ideas and principles in our practice. And the most common eye disease actually is called myopia or nearsightedness, where the light is improperly focused, either one because the eye itself is too long, or the lens system is focusing the light rays too strongly, and so essentially the light is out of focus when you're looking at things, and so we can change the shape of the focusing apparatus to correct the myopia and allow people to see not only clearly at distance, but nowadays at all ranges with the technology that we have.
And a little aside on myopia, it's becoming an epidemic worldwide. In Asia, 100% of high school students are now myopic, and 80% are high myopia. High myopia leads to diseases after about age 40. And the international societies are now trying to address myopia as a major health issue and find ways to reverse this. A lot of this is driven in advanced societies by a lot of near work and indoor activity. They found that if kids could spend 2 hours a day outside, their myopia progression is cut in half, and they're now starting to use a very dilute drop of atropine, especially in Asia, to slow down this progression of myopia, because you don't want all these high myopes, because that's the disease. That leads to really big problems later in life.
Why are there so many numbers there?
So many people are doing near work. You know, they're on their computers. You know, kids are on tablets all day long. They don't get outside. It's something to do with UV light interaction, minimum of 2 hours a day. And we all got it when we were kids. Everybody played outside. It doesn't happen anymore. Kids are on their tablets, and when they're in school now, they're constantly reading or doing near work, and that drives the myopia, so that kids become very highly myopic by the time they're teenagers. The eye only has a certain window where it grows and becomes myopic, and that's usually between, you know, 1 and 25 years of age. Then it quits changing.
Yeah, so, you know, we hear that. It's like, well, don't keep watching television. Don't keep doing this. You know, it's going to affect your eyesight. But what you're saying is this is absolutely a truism.
It's true, but more in the sense that you need to have some outdoor time. This 2 hour minimum of outdoor time is very important for young children.
And it's not that just sitting too close, you know, a little kid sitting too close to the TV for, you know, 5 minutes is going to hurt their eyesight. It's the, you know, day after day, hour after hour, looking at something too close during that critical developmental period, which, as he said, you know, things stop to, they stop changing so much when you're in your mid-20s, mm-hmm. and your eye shape or length kind of stabilizes like the rest of the growth in your body. But as he was alluding to it, really this high myopia really leads to significant disease later in life. So you've heard of retinal detachment. And once your eye reaches a certain length, the incidence of retinal detachment goes up exponentially. And people that develop retinal detachments, some of them may have surgery for it and regain some vision, but there's a very significant number of those people who are legally blind in an eye due to a retinal detachment. Another one is macular degeneration. And unfortunately, with macular degeneration, it's a very common disease, and it's very difficult to treat. Once it sets in and starts to damage the macula, which is a central part of the retina that's responsible for your reading vision, it may be very difficult to reverse the effects that has on your vision. And it's one of those are two significant causes of vision loss and blindness as folks get older. And
sure, maybe we can come back and talk a little bit more of that in detail. We actually have our first call. And this is Don from Magnolia. Don, welcome to Health Matters. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, great, and glad to hear you guys. About 3 weeks ago, I went outside in the early morning, extreme photophobia. I mean, incredibly bright. Couldn't read letters on the TV, that kind of thing. I am diabetic. It took several hours for me to basically where I could actually process, and so now I'm 3 weeks behind that. I'm looking at a cataract surgery probably in 3 or 4 weeks, and I just wanted to know, is this something, well, number one, what can I do about the photophobia, but number two, is this a problem prior to my cataract surgery?
Well, hopefully your cataract surgery is going to eliminate the glare that caused your light sensitivity. You know, I suspect that's your cataract that's blinding you when you go outside. And the key thing there is to make sure your retina's been checked and there's no sign of diabetic retinopathy. And if all is well in the back of the eye, you should have a great result with modern cataract surgery. The results are spectacular. There are great lenses out there. If you're diabetic, I'd be hesitant to go into the more sophisticated bifocal lenses. I'd probably stick with something that there's some that give you a little near vision. There's a new one, Eyhance, that works very well in diabetics. But I think you'll have a great result with surgery, and it's going to eliminate a lot of your problem.
I agree with what he's saying, but I also would add that if your light sensitivity was combined with like redness or irritation, or if it's persistent, there are some other eye diseases. One of them is called iritis or uveitis, and there's a number of reasons why someone might have iritis or uveitis, which is essentially inflammation inside the eye. And so, of course, you would want to have that checked out. And I assume whoever you consulted with would have looked at that and made sure that there wasn't any inflammation in your eye prior to taking you to surgery, because that's something that might affect the surgical outcome. So you'd want to get that addressed first. But
I was wondering about that. I have had incredibly successful cataract surgery on my right eye about 5 years ago. Everything's fantastic. It was done by laser, and I can't say enough what the difference was prior to and then afterwards. And so, but you know, you're right. I have had what is a dry eye, I guess. I'm putting lubricants in. I haven't stepped up to any polymycin with dexamethasone or anything like that yet. Is photophobia a permanent thing that I might have to deal with?
Depends on the cause.
It shouldn't be, and I think you really need to see somebody. And just like Brian said, it could be from iritis. It could also be from your dry eye. I mean, your dry eye is a very common cause of photophobia. And you didn't mention all that at the beginning. I would have said right away, well, yeah, your dry eye is probably contributing to these problems. And you need to be seeing your practitioner prior to surgery for sure to make sure that your surface is in good shape for the surgery, because the surgery is a little hard on the surface tissues. And if they're already dry, they're going to get drier. So make sure that you're in good shape before you walk in that operating room.
Don, I want to thank you for your question there. As long as the topic of cataracts came up, can we talk a little bit about what specifically are cataracts? And he was talking about some very obvious symptoms there. Are there symptoms that one might notice? And then we can maybe talk a little bit about the treatment, but maybe just define it first.
Sure. A cataract is really a clouding of the inner lens within the eye. The eye works like a camera, and there's essentially two lenses, the outer corneal lens, which is like the watch crystal, and then the lens inside the eye, which is behind the iris, or the colored part. The iris kind of works like an aperture, and it expands or contracts to allow more or less light in, depending upon how much ambient lighting there is to facilitate the vision. So the cataract is a clouding of that inner lens in the eye. The term cataract actually comes from the Greek word for waterfall. You know, thousands of years ago, the Greeks would look in the eye and just see this whitening, and they go, "Hey, you got a waterfall in your eye." and for some reason, it just kind of stuck.
That sounds kind of pleasant.
And so a cataract is just it's an opacity. It's like a frosted over window pane. That's essentially what a cataract is. It's an opaque lens in the eye that's typically due to aging, but it can be due to certain diseases. Diabetes can lead to acceleration of cataracts. Certain medications, radiation exposure can lead to development of cataracts at a younger age. Some people develop them at a younger age. It's just a genetic tendency. Certain inherited disorders can lead to formation of certain types of cataracts.
And they're all treated the same. It's cataract removal with lens implantation, and the implants continue to develop. We have three major companies competing against each other that have the best widget, and a new one, this Eyhance just came out, and now another company, they've got to one-up each other. Every 6 months, it seems like we have a little more, an enhancement to the implants, and they've been spectacular changes. that, you know, I had my cataract surgery about 2 years ago, and now I would, if I was doing it today, I'd be doing a different lens because they've had that much improvement just in
it's
the last couple
kind
of years.
It's a competition, yeah. They keep leapfrogging each other and
well,
putting out good products.
Different, not just different brands, but different types of lenses. So
exactly.
Talk a little bit about that because you were, I mean, you can do bifocal type lenses?
Right. Now, there are monofocal lenses, which we've had since the 1980s when I started. And they've been improved and embellished on. And then they came out with lenses to correct astigmatism, and that was a big development. And then in about 2008, they came out with bifocal implants. The initial bifocals had a lot of glare, halos at night. And the last 3 years, we've had major advancements in the bifocal implants with a much improved sharpness of vision, ability to see closer, trifocal implant. And then they're very expensive, the bifocals. Okay,
so trifocal, the companies, I mean, seeing in all three ranges, the distance, intermediate, and near.
I got this. One question that immediately comes to mind, because I think of, like, bifocal glasses, and you look through different parts of the glasses for different, but how do you do that when the lens is actually?
That's a neat thing about the bifocal or trifocal lenses. They have rings, so not only is it near down below where you're reading, but it's near up top and to the sides, so it has different segments in the lens that put the light from different distances on your retina, and so it splits the light. Now, there's a new one called the Eyhance, which has a sort of a range of near vision, which is very nice because you don't have that break. You just see from a distance of infinity, to, you know, way out, meaning infinity, to, let's say, to about 14 inches. It doesn't come as close as some of the true bifocals, but it also doesn't cost as much, and it's a very clear lens like the monofocal lens. So I've been very excited about that one recently because we can use that on people with dry eye and with that have had previous LASIK. Some people that can't get the true multifocal, trifocal lenses can get these other lenses that still give them some near vision, which is huge. As you know, anybody over the age of 50 knows how bad it is up close and how it's, you know, how much you want to see that, you know, they get that near vision back. Yeah.
He reaches in his pocket for his readers.
Right.
Yeah, no, absolutely true. I just want to remind everybody, you're listening to Health Matters this evening, and Dr. James Lusk, Dr. Brian Lusk are my guests. We're talking about eye health. Here's the number to call if you have a question. 800-552-8502. That is 800-552-8502. And we'd love to hear from you if you'd like to give us a call. So, again, related, since we're on the topic of cataracts, what are the flags, the signals that if someone experiences them, they should go to see their ophthalmologist?
I'd say most often patients have difficulty with their night vision. They usually come in saying, you know, I just can't drive at night anymore. I have too much glare, or I can't read the print, the crawler on the TV. You know, it's just out of focus. Can you help me? And it's usually cataract. If it's not a refractive error, a glasses need, then it's usually a cataract for most people. Unfortunately, sometimes it's macular degeneration, which is aging changes in the retina. But even on those patients, we can improve their vision by, you know, cataracts are inevitable. If we live long enough, we're going to get them. I got them. You know, it's going to happen. Some people earlier than others, but, you know, we can all be improved.
Okay, and of course we've all heard of different surgeries. I mean, you're talking about replacing the lens and all of that, but we hear about laser cataract surgery and things like LASIK and all of that. Talk a little bit about those procedures and how they might be modifying, what the developments in them, what might be different about them.
And you want to talk about LASIK or?
Sure. I also wanted to just address, you were talking about symptoms of cataracts, and what he mentioned was very typical symptoms, you know, starting out with glare, difficulty night driving, just blurry vision most of the time. But nowadays, the multifocal implants that we were just talking about have actually allowed us to reach a subset of people who in the past we didn't really have great treatments for. And those are the people that are in their 50s, late 40s, 50s, early 60s, who are farsighted, who have lost their ability to focus up close. And they're frustrated because, you know, initially it was just that they couldn't focus up close, but as their farsightedness gets worse and they lose their ability to focus more as they get closer to their 60s, they start to lose their distance as well. and they're really not great LASIK candidates because of what you have to do to the cornea to correct farsightedness. And so now we have these multifocal implants that really allow us to restore a more complete range of vision. And so those folks are really looking for a refractive correction by changing out their lens, by taking out their, and even if their cataract's not super cloudy, that cataract is there and it's causing that loss of lack of focus, that loss of focus. And by removing that that lens that's not focusing for them, call it a dysfunctional lens, we can replace it with one of these newer styles of multifocal lenses that restore a more complete range of vision for them. And so your next question was, well, what about, like, how do you do it? Do you do someone like that the same way that you do someone that comes in and they're legally blind because they've got a cataract? And the answer really is yes. The laser cataract surgery really is laser-assisted cataract surgery. And there was this big push for laser cataract surgery a handful of years ago when the technology was developed because, hey, laser everything is more precise, right? We use these same lasers when we do LASIK, and they thought that, hey, this could really improve our results and outcomes with cataract surgery. And so there was a big push, and we all acquired these lasers, and we have access to them. And some folks who come in have done their research, and they say, well, I really want the laser because it sounds more precise and more accurate. And while there are aspects of that that is true, really everyone is still having the cataract removed by ultrasound. So the technology was developed by Dr. Charles Kelman back in the late 70s and early 80s, and it is a high-frequency ultrasonic needle that vibrates at ultrasonic frequency that emulsifies or softens the hardened lens and then aspirates it out of the eye through the needle tip. Mm-hmm. And you can do it through a very small incision that self-seals, doesn't require any sutures or stitches. And it takes about 10 to 20 minutes, depending on, you know, the difficulty level of the cataract and the patient, other patient factors. But so what the laser does is the laser can assist with the cataract surgery by creating incisions, by making some of the initial openings into the cataract. What we have found through experience is that at Lusk Eye Specialists, our outcomes are just as good as laser performed outcomes. And now we have the laser, and so if someone insists that they really want to do the laser, we can do that. But our manual small incisions are every bit as accurate. What we know through our experience and through research is that really what determines the outcome is your biometry, okay, which are the measurements that you take on the eye prior to surgery. So a lot of the work in getting the focus correct after surgery is done not during surgery, but actually prior to surgery, with the mapping and measurements we take on the eye. And Lusk Eye Specialists and our partners really put a lot of effort into personally measuring and mapping the cornea and the eye to make sure that we have the most precise and accurate numbers so we can put the, you know, most correct lens implant to achieve the patient's desired outcome. And then, of course, you know, we believe that we're great surgeons, and we're going to take advantage of all our hard work up front and do a perfect surgery in order to, seal the deal for the patient.
All right. We're talking with Dr. Brian Lusk and Dr. James Lusk. You're listening to Health Matters this evening. And the topic, as you might have guessed by now, is eye care, eye health. We'd love to hear from you this evening if you want to give us a call at 800-552-8502. With any questions you may have, our doctors are happy to answer them, and we'd love to hear from listeners who might even have some comments related to their own experience. I do want to ask, and then we'll move on from cataracts. But what are the complications that can occur? And talk a little bit about after you have the surgery done, how you need to take care of yourself, recovery, that type of thing.
I never have a complication, so I'm going to let him answer that.
Yeah, the long-term complication with cataract surgery is a slightly increased risk of retinal detachment. Now, people get retinal detachments in the normal population without any surgery, but it does increase after cataract surgery. So we warn all our patients of flashing lights and floaters, which are the first symptom of a retinal tear, and tell them they come in and get it checked out, and they won't have a problem with the detachment. And the implants do have some glare to them, just like our natural lens does, and some of the patients have minor complaints of that. But those are usually, just something that's more a soft problem that they get over. Some of the patients expect more out of the implants than they get, especially people that are nearsighted and could read without their glasses expect the bifocal lens to just put things in perfect focus right at the tip of their nose. Well, it's not quite as good as some of their natural myopes had in the past, and so they're disappointed. But anybody that's farsighted and has an implant goes, I just can't believe how well I see up close. They're just they're blown away by it.
Right, based on what their experience was.
Where they came from, it's what they had before and where they are now. One thing I did want to mention, we talked about how things have changed in the 40 years, and I'll tell you, there have been some good and there's been bad. Medicare's been fantastic, by the way. The unfortunate part of it is we're draining the budget, and so there's less dollars to go around, but it had to put the footprint out for us to develop all these great technologies and allowed science to develop in the United States. One of the problems I've seen, though, is doctors are coming out with huge debt. They're being hired by hospitals, and the entrepreneurial spirit is being lost among physicians. As we went out and did our own surgery center, back in 2000, and, we started with, it's three doctors, myself and two other doctors, and we have 11 eye surgeons all in one center now, and we feel like that's the best model. Number one, it's at least expensive. We're 30% lower than a hospital when it comes to the cost of surgery. That's a dramatic difference in what co-pays the patients have to pay. Also, we have totally dedicated eye nurses that do nothing but eye surgery. They don't have to jump from a gallbladder into eye surgery, as they might in a hospital. So, we hope that physicians continue with that entrepreneurial spirit where we can still be owners of our own practices. So many are living in hospital towers and they pay their rent to the hospital. They're totally controlled, and they work for the hospitals. I don't think that's the best model for any business. I think the best model is independence, creativity, innovation. There's still 20% of the doctors out there that are doing that in our community, and I wish them well. And we were part of that, and it is a kind of a scary thing for these young people to face that going into practice in this day and time. It wasn't as bad when I was going into practice. The physicians were still more in control of their destiny. That's very difficult now.
Yeah. How was it actually taking it up as a family practice, essentially?
Right. It's funny it worked out that way. It's been really kind
of
convenient.
I tried. I said, one of you needs to spread the risk. Yeah. Somebody do something else. Yeah. Ortho's a really nice field, but they said, Dad, you had it so good. I think we're just going to step right in. Thank you.
Well, he's happy. He was happy, and you, as a medical student, you're on rounds with other physicians and other fields, and you can feel, the dissatisfaction and the angst and the frustration with kind of what he's talking about. They're working for the man and don't have that freedom and autonomy and voice a lot of frustration. And so, ophthalmology does allow an opportunity to be outpatient, sort of outside the hospital system and kind of, functioning sort of freelance on your own, which is great. But it allows us to be a little bit more responsible, I'd say, too, with healthcare resources, because we're looking at our budget and we're looking at, what's going to, help our patients the most. We're evaluating technology, not just like, hey, what's the latest thing, but like what is actually proven, to have an impact, on right. patient care. Right. And one example of that is we started doing antibiotics inside the eye at the time of cataract surgery a couple of years back, because there was some recent literature that was showing Infection after cataract surgery is one of the complications or potential side effects. Right. Now, that's true of any surgery you have. And of course, if you got an infection in your eye, it's devastating. And fortunately, it's very rare to have an infection in your eye after cataract surgery. However, there were studies that came out that did show a statistically significant reduction in endophthalmitis, which is infection within the eye after cataract surgery, when you inject antibiotics in the eye. Now, if you're working for a big hospital group, you've got to jump through a lot of hoops to try to say, okay, well, we want to start doing this, even though no one else is really doing it, you know, and probably the board would look at you and go, heck no, you're not doing that, you know, like,
it costs money.
Maybe it costs money, or you're not going to be the first ones to do it, or you're going to wait and see what happens. And we were able to critically evaluate the data that was there and determine, hey, this is the best thing for patients. And we decided, you know what, we're going to suck up the cost and give this to our patients, because it's the right thing, it's the best thing, and we can make it work. And hey, it ended up actually helping us out, because one issue after surgery is compliance of medications. A lot of people just forget, you know, older folks, they just forget to put their drops in. Sure. And so if the outcome is dependent on you putting your drops in, then that may be in jeopardy. And so by delivering the medications in the eye at the time of surgery, it's costing us a little bit more money up front, but in the end, you know, it's really ensuring a good outcome for our patients, and our technicians spend less time on the phone tracking down medications and calling companies. And so it's a win-win for everybody. This is just one example of how being in your own business, running your own medical practice, allows you to be more responsible with healthcare dollars and resources and do the best that you can for the patient.
You're listening to Health Matters this evening. My guests, Dr. Brian Lusk and Dr. James Lusk, we're discussing eye health, eye care. One thing that comes to mind, if we can kind of move to a seasonal discussion, you know, it's summer. People are out enjoying the sunshine. We hear a lot about, you know, concerns and dangers of the sun for a variety of reasons, not just related to eye health, but there are some eye health conditions that are connected with the sun, aren't there?
You know, true macular degeneration can be accelerated by a lot of intense light, but we're talking, you know, just people that work on the, you know, those sailors on the water,
yeah, right,
or fishermen that are just exposed all the time. For most folks, a good pair of sunglasses, all plastic lenses block UV light. Mm-hmm. Probably more important than having a fancy, expensive pair of glasses is to have a wraparound pair, because UV light bounces off there, the sand, the concrete, everything. And so having something that gives you a little wrap, and even in a cheap pair of sunglasses, is going to give you a lot of benefit. Now, polarized glasses, of course, give you that extra ability to cut the glare. But as far as UV light goes, just a good plastic lens is going to give you pretty good protection. And yeah, we recommend that, but very few people get such an exposure that they get really bad. There is one condition, though, that's UV-induced, and that's pterygiums. It's a growth on the corner of the eyes, and we see that much more commonly the lower you go in latitude. So in Mexico, and we have a lot of Mexican immigrants now, we have these folks coming in with pterygiums that are blinding. They will grow over from the white part of the eye across the cornea. These people pay cash for their surgeries, and so they come to us because we can discount them, so we don't have the larger hospital fees, etc. And we get a lot of those folks that come in for pterygium treatments, and both from our restaurants and from the workers, Latino workers out in the community, we see more pterygiums among them than anybody in our community.
But it's cumulative exposure, too. So you're seeing a lot of these side effects of UV light and sunlight in older folks who have spent a lot of years, you know, and as he was saying, some of the immigrants have spent a lot of time working outdoors, and they have these side effects, and macular degeneration as well. And one thing that people can do, too, is they can assess their own risk by looking at their family history. So folks that have a family history, you know, a parent or a grandparent, an aunt or an uncle who lost vision due to macular degeneration, they need to be a little bit more cautious, you know. And one of the things is wearing good sunglasses, like you said, when you're outdoors, you know, reduce that cumulative exposure. The other thing is smoking. Tobacco smoking has been shown to be the largest single modifiable risk factor for preventing macular degeneration. You know, not just lung cancer, but actually macular degeneration. And it's amazing the number of people who we have that come in have macular degeneration. We say, you know, you need to stop smoking. And they say, I know I might go blind, but I can't do it. I mean, think about it when you're young. You know, look at your fit, look at your, you know, it's easier to change that smoking habit. It's easier to get it in the habit of wearing sunglasses when you're in your 30s and 40s, and you know, you see that a family member suffered from this instead of waiting till you're 60 or 70. And as my dad can tell you, it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks.
Well, we'll come back to some of that. The number to call, by the way, is 800-552-8502 to participate in Health Matters. We do have a caller. This is Rosalind from Shreveport. Rosalind, thanks for your call. What's your question?
Thank you so much. Good evening, all. This question is for Dr. Brian Lusk. We've been, my family has been going to Lusk Eye Specialties for about 20 years now. And earlier this year, Dr. Brian Lusk was able to help us tremendously because my mother had momentary loss of sight in her eye. And although we went to the ER on three occasions and to her PCP on three occasions, none of them could point us to the real cause of the problem. We went to Dr. Brian, and immediately he said, after doing some tests, I shouldn't say immediately, but he said, has she had a stroke workup? And I said, no. And he said, well, if she were my grandmother, I'd take her to have a stroke workup, which we did. And so my question for Dr. Brian Lusk is, would you speak to how basic eye exams can point to other health issues such as stroke? Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rosalind, for your question.
Yeah, thank you for the question. That's such a great point. Yeah, the eyes are, they're the window to the soul, as people say, and they are the window to the health of the rest of the body. You know, we actually have an opportunity when we look into the eye with our magnifying lenses to look at blood vessels and even red blood cells passing through those blood vessels. And we can tell when people have uncontrolled, longstanding high blood pressure. We can, you know, we can look and tell when they have high cholesterol, when they have diabetes, when they have atherosclerotic disease or a narrowing of the blood vessels that limits blood flow to the tissues. You see, we see that disease in the eye and you think, oh, it's just the eye, right? Well, no. Those same changes are also occurring in the kidneys, in the liver, in the heart, in the brain. So we just have a special opportunity to see those things when we look inside the eye. And yes, you're right. When with some of the ancillary testing that we have, we can pick up neurological changes that have occurred in the brain in some older folks or folks that have had things like strokes. And so we can pick things up that maybe other fields of medicine aren't able quite to catch, and then, you know, get the right, you know, treatment for that patient. In some cases, you know, life-threatening
diseases. Just an aside to that, they have established three stroke centers in Shreveport now. There's one at Piermont, one in Bossier, and LSU. And we often send patients to the stroke center because very often a patient will have a small stroke in the eye, which we can detect with our dilated exam. I had a man this week came in with what's called a branch retinal artery occlusion, and 30% of those patients are going to go on to a major stroke if they're not tended to. So we didn't wait till the next day. He went to the stroke centers, take him that day. We call him. We say, I have a branch retinal artery occlusion. They immediately accept them into the program. They are hospitalized, and they undergo angiography of their carotid arteries, and they detect blockages, and they save a lot of lives.
So what are some practical things for patients, though? And I believe this patient had what we call transient vision loss, or amaurosis fugax. So basically her vision was kind of just blacking out, you know, momentarily, and it would come back. So obviously there are a lot of causes of blurred vision, but like having a black curtain or shade come down over your vision, last a couple minutes and go away, is one of the things that can indicate something very serious going on inside the body. And so that needs to be, you know, evaluated right away.
I think it would be pretty frightening too.
Extremely frightening. Other things, those people can have double vision, and when double vision developed later in life is combined with things like weakness, numbness in an extremity, slurred speech, difficulty walking in a straight line, altered mentation. You know, when you have a constellation of neurological symptoms, that's an indication that you need to be evaluated urgently.
Yeah. And as long as we're talking about other conditions and that relate to eyesight, I guess I'll toss out my own personal experience here, and you can talk about how that relates. So I'm nearsighted, astigmatism, been since I was a kid. Wear contacts, and, you know, contacts correct, great. One night, in the middle of the night, I woke up, and I could see across the room. But, I mean, I could see across the room. Everything was really clear. I'm like going, oh, did I leave my contacts in? Did I have my glasses on? I was really very confused. Well, I went... It continued over several nights, and I finally went to have my eyes checked, and my prescription improved dramatically. So got some new contacts. A week later, after I had them in, I was having, you know, vision problems again. Well, my eyes had improved yet again. So this happened for several weeks, and he finally said, you know, usually, if you have diabetes, your vision gets worse. I think it's related to the sugar in your lenses, and this is causing you to get better and better vision. And as it turned out, as my physician said when I finally got checked for diabetes, she said, "Well, you don't have diabetes. You have whopping big diabetes." So it was an incredibly
like a scientific term.
yeah, I guess that was her scientific term. But it of course it scared the heck out of me. But I had not realized the connection between diabetes and eyesight. I mean, you hear about, you know, extreme cases and people going blind and all of that, but
more common than you think. Yeah. It's more common than you think.
Well, talk about that relationship between diabetes, because, you know, we have a lot of cases.
It's an epidemic in the United States, especially in the South. Type 2 diabetes is correlated with weight gain and obesity, and unfortunately, our lifestyle and diet here and south of the Mason-Dixon line really is kind of, you know, tends to that. And
Mexico has passed us up. The first country that's passed us up with more diabetes and more obesity than the United States is now Mexico.
Wow.
Which is hard to believe. They have a high carbohydrate diet. And that's the real problem. And you develop a sugar type called sorbitol in your lens, and that causes the change in the structure of the lens, the thickness of the lens, so it corrected your refractive error. And once I got your sugar back down, it all went back to the natural state.
Yeah, I had to go back to my
original far sinus came back, and yeah. So you had to go back to your contacts, right?
Yeah.
The real problem with diabetes is that it damages the blood vessels.
Mm-hmm.
So it damages the blood vessels within the eye, the small capillaries, and so the red blood cells, which deliver oxygen to the tissues, cannot get to those end organ tissues in your retina to deliver the oxygen. So the retina becomes starved for oxygen. So it starts growing new blood vessels in an effort to try to get more oxygen to the tissues. But those new blood vessels are very fragile. They're prone to breaking. And so you get bleeding within the eye. You get leakage of cholesterol and fatty deposits into the retina. So you get this, you know, the retina... everything in the eye is like very tightly packed and spaced and perfectly aligned. And so when you get swelling in the tissues in the eye, particularly in the retina, you know, the vision can become distorted and quite bad very, very quickly. So it leads to scar formation and retinal detachments and certain types of glaucoma. A lot of really difficult to treat diseases, and a lot of times once someone's really gone far down that path of diabetic retinopathy, it is really hard to get them back to, you know.
Yeah, and the key is prevention, you know, and I'm sure everybody's heard it from their family doctor. Hemoglobin A1C below 6.5. If you maintain it below 6.5, your kidneys are going to last, your eyes are going to last, but if you don't, you're going to get in trouble.
So you were talking about prevention related to the diabetic, but what about just healthy prevention, maintenance, of one's eyesight. What do you guys recommend in terms of people coming to see you? How regularly should they have appointments? What should they be watching for in case something goes amiss?
Well, obviously, with any symptom, they should come in. And everybody should have an eye exam by age 40. And usually, they're pushed to an eye exam because they get the presbyopia, have trouble seeing up close, so they come into the eye doctor. And we discover a lot of new glaucoma at that age. And we can prevent a lot of blindness by catching glaucoma early. And our community has a great deal of glaucoma because it is six times more common in the African-American community. And we have a lot of glaucoma. And some of them, unfortunately, come in at the end stage. They come in when they're 60, and they've already had 20 years of damage. And we're trying to hang on to that last little bit. Symptoms and exam by age 40. Obviously, children, if they have any kind of eye crossing, all children should be screened, and they usually are screened now by their pediatrician. They have instruments in all the pediatrician's office now to screen to make sure that child is using both eyes successfully to avoid something called amblyopia, which is a permanent decrease in vision in one eye. So all children should be screened, and then, of course, all adults by age 40, or if they have any symptom at all of pain, redness, decreased vision, flashes and floaters, just anything unusual about their eyes.
Since I've hit 40 recently, that seems like it's a magical number for things to start to go wrong with your health and slow. You're injured and it takes longer to heal, and so I think that's a good age. You know, if you've never had a comprehensive dilated eye exam, so that means don't just go in and get your glasses checked or your contacts checked. It means go in and actually get your eyes dilated. You can still drive after your eyes are dilated. You may need some shades because you do have more light coming into your eyes, but you need a good thorough dilated exam where, you know, a doctor looks at the retina, looks at the optic nerve, checks the pressure, all of those things. And I think if you do that every couple of years after the age of 40, you're going to catch things like glaucoma. But his point is right on. Glaucoma is called the sneak thief of sight. It's, you know,
can you talk a little bit about what glaucoma is?
Right. So glaucoma is optic nerve damage. So there are a number of diseases that can cause damage to the optic nerve. So back to our kind of camera analogy, think of yours like a digital camera. It's like the cable connecting that digital camera to the computer. And if you wear away that cable enough or you sever the cable, then the signal can't get from the camera to the computer and you can't see. And so glaucoma is the most common type of optic nerve damage, which we call optic neuropathy, and it's correlated with elevated pressure within the eyes. And it's also a genetic susceptibility and tendency. And he pointed out that it's six times more common in African-Americans. And there are even subsets of African-Americans. And I believe that Shreveport has a high incidence of African-Americans with a West African ancestry. And they have a very high incidence of a certain type of primary open-angle glaucoma. That it's just a gradually developing loss of your peripheral vision. So when you have macular degeneration, you lose that central reading vision. And so it's pretty apparent because you go, gosh, I can't read anymore. But the problem with glaucoma is that you may maintain your reading vision until the end stages of the disease. So they're like 20/25, 20/25, boom, 2100, 2200, legally blind. Once it reaches that end stage, and they didn't even know they had it because it gradually, you know, you just gradually lose your peripheral vision. And it's amazing. I mean, there are a lot of people out there driving around with advanced glaucoma, and they still pass a driving test because if you do a confrontation visual field, you know, holding fingers up in front of a patient, hey, do you see these here? Do you see these there? You know, they can pass it with both eyes open. They can generally pass it even in advanced stages. And it's not till, you know, the very end where they lose that, and then it's too late to really do anything. The problem with optic nerve damage of any kind, and we're talking about glaucoma here, is that once you lose it, you can't get it back.
And, you know, he didn't mention, but it's high pressure in the eye traditionally that causes a damage to the optic nerve. The optic nerve is that cable going from the eyeball to the brain. The computer's the brain. The optic nerve goes from the eyeball itself to your brain, and it's damaged by the glaucoma. It's compressed.
Okay.
So that's one of the risk factors you check for. You look at the optic nerve, see if there's damage. You check the pressure. If the pressure is above, you know, like the normal 16, you know, like two standard deviations is above is like 22. So anything over 22, you know, can be abnormal. But what we have found, you know, in the past, if you had high pressure, you had glaucoma. But now what we know is that some people can have glaucoma and still have normal pressures, and that's called normal tension glaucoma. So it's important not only that you get your pressure checked, but that someone actually looks at the optic nerve, because that's truly how you diagnose glaucoma and optic nerve disease.
Okay. I do have one question that was sent in online, and this is related to access to care, that access to care affects vision loss in our country. Could you talk a little bit about, insurance, but especially Medicare replacement plans and how that affects access to care?
All right. Well, I'm on Medicare, so I can answer that.
Oh, good. Okay.
So I'm on Medicare Blue Cross, and unfortunately, a lot of our seniors are accessing these Advantage plans. They are sold by salesmen, and salesmen are out to make a buck. A lot of these plans are really not good plans, and some plans are good, but if you want to play it safe, you're going to stay on regular Medicare and get a supplemental insurance. The VA's got a good supplement, but for our rank-and-file seniors out there, over 65, I don't think there's any better plan than just getting Medicare and a supplement like Blue Cross or AARP, something along those lines. When they get in these Advantage plans, there are lots of loopholes where they have $1,000 deductibles or they've got co-pays at every visit. And they bleed you down. And a lot of our patients are not able to access care because they can't afford the costs of these that are in their plan. Remember, you can change your plan every year. You can sign up again. I think it's in October, November, something like that, where you can change back to your regular Medicare. So don't feel like you got to stay with those plans when you've discovered that all of a sudden this is not working, because a lot of them don't work.
Some of the plans can be very restrictive as well. When my father-in-law, who lives in New York, was here and was having some health issues and needed to be treated urgently, he found out that in order to be seen by a local doctor, even though he had, quote, Medicare and decent insurance, they were out of network, and it was going to cost him, he's going to have to pay thousands upon thousands of dollars in cash to get this, you know, emergent and urgent care, you know, that couldn't be delayed, and he couldn't just, like, jump on a plane and fly back to New York. So it's really important to, you know, to get the straight dope on your health insurance. And a lot of people, you know, they go with these less expensive plans, and they're packaged by these savvy salesmen, and you just really have to be careful with that and do your homework. And if you're not sure, there are people out there that you can consult, and maybe one of the best persons to consult is your family doctor the next time you're in to see them.
Since we're on the topic of Medicare and supplements, for the most part, and thinking preventively, because it seems like a number of these things, if you saw someone soon enough, like the glaucoma issue, you'd be much better off. Do they tend to cover like an annual visit?
They do. And a lot of these healthcare plans are geared toward preventive care. And as long as you're well and you don't have a problem, they do fine. But if you suddenly have a disease, that's where the costs start coming in. That's where they get you. They don't pay for those. They have these big deductibles and co-pays when it comes to real disease, and then the patients can't afford it.
Or the medications may cost too much.
And the medication
treatments
costs,
that are recommended,
right,
may not be affordable.
Sure. Well, this has been a fascinating discussion. Congratulations again, by the way, 40 years of having Lusk eye specialists. My guests have been Dr. James Lusk and Dr. Brian Lusk, and of course we've been talking about healthcare. Thanks to those of you who have called in. I do want to say that Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only, and for all health questions, you should consult a physician or a health professional. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Views expressed on Health Matters may not necessarily express those of Red River Radio, LSUS, or staff. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran. Phone assistance has been provided this evening by Wally Gerlith. Production of Health Matters is made possible in part by the Noel Foundation and by the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Be sure to join us next Thursday evening for another edition of Health Matters. I'm Kermit Poling. Thanks again for joining us.